Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome to Today's Issues on this Thursday, September 21st. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman, who we expect to be back in the captain's chair tomorrow for Trivia Friday. It's hard to imagine that it is almost already Friday. I'm joined in studio by Walker Wildman. Walker, welcome.
Good to be here. One day closer to Friday. And speaking of Trivia Friday, you know this, but our listeners might not. We have our new Trivia Friday t-shirts in stock.
I saw Jim Stanley was wearing one. I saw it came by my office. I gotta get one.
Yeah, and what I'll do is I'll get you and Dad, Tim, and JJ one tomorrow you can wear on the show.
There you go.
Good promotion.
And so people who are watching on Facebook Live can see the new t-shirts.
That's it.
And those who are not watching live on Facebook, well, they'll just have to kind of imagine it.
That's it.
All right. So they can go online maybe. We'll see. We'll have it figured out in terms of how folks can order it. Also joined in studio by Chris Woodward, who's news anchor for American Family News. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning. Thank you again.
You're sitting in for Fred Jackson,
yes,
who is in the frozen tundra of the north.
Yes.
In Nova Scotia, Canada.
Enjoying a bit of time with friends and family up there.
Yeah, that's right. And Chris, you're in to do Fred's job. Obviously, it's not going to be quite up to the standards we're used to with Fred. He's your boss. I'm sure you would agree with this.
I will do my best to have a hat trick.
A hat trick.
Yeah.
Wow.
See what I did there?
A hockey term. Yeah. That's I'm very
can
impressed.
Can I get a t-shirt because of that?
Yes, you can.
All right.
Well, what we got news-wise?
Well, certainly the big topics today, again, are going to be Hurricane Maria. It's now expected to drench the Dominican Republic. We had a forecast there at the top of the hour in our newscast from Fox News meteorologist Janice Dean. But after blasting through Puerto Rico on Wednesday, leaving the entire island powerless, Maria will bring fierce winds and drenching rain to the Dominican Republic today. As the storm moves to the northwest overnight Thursday and into Friday, Maria will roar past the Turks and Caicos Islands and eastern portions of the Bahamas, where hurricane warnings are already in effect. Right now, it appears that it's not going to hit Florida or some other part of the U.S. after hitting our friends and neighbors there in Puerto Rico. It looks like it's going to move out into the ocean, although things could change, so stay on top of that. And certainly if you know anybody in Puerto Rico, try to reach out to them. We should be in prayer for Puerto Rico. There have been reports that they're already going to be out of electricity for weeks, if not months, because of just this hurricane. And the nation itself already has financial trouble. So,
I was looking at the big headline on Drudge Report talking about Maria hitting Puerto Rico, says blown back to the dark ages.
Right.
And as you're talking, as you're mentioning, there are warnings there that power could be out for months. Now, just think about that. No, at least it's not, July.
Right.
But now that's temperate climate all year round anyway, so it's going to be still warm.
Mm-hmm.
But you're talking about without electricity, without power for months. Not only no air conditioning, but sometimes, water plants, all that, everything can be affected by that.
You're looking at big healthcare issues there in terms of hospitals being able to treat certain things, how they're able to treat them. You know, FEMA has already offered to step in. President Trump has declared an emergency for Puerto Rico, and we are pumping federal dollars to Puerto Rico. So I would imagine some of that will go towards generators and other things that might help get power on, at least in limited supply, to the various infrastructures. Or the infrastructure, in Puerto Rico that would be dealing with that. The other thing we're watching, continuing to watch, is the search and rescue efforts in Mexico City. They're carrying on today as emergency responders are trying to find more survivors trapped beneath collapsed buildings. There have been children that were found. There have been other people found. The massive quake hit near the town of Reboso, about 76 miles southwest of Mexico City, according to the U.S. Geological Survey. Body count has been all over the place, but it appears that right now at least 200 to 300 people were killed by the quake, but certainly that number could rise. And then, of course, that's not even counting injuries. And the fact that a lot of people are missing still after this Mexico City earthquake, which, as we were talking about yesterday, comes 2 weeks or so after another big quake in another part of Mexico. So that nation is dealing with a lot of disaster as well at the moment.
So, folks, I Christians should always be praying, but in terms of these kinds of natural disasters, which come, I mean, they come, that they're a part of existence on this planet. I hope people are still praying and maybe even giving to 8 Days of Hope for, you know, helping those that suffered under Hurricane Harvey. We had Irma was not quite as destructive, but now you've had two earthquakes in Mexico and now the disaster in Puerto Rico, which President Trump said has been absolutely obliterated. I'm seeing all kinds of pictures online. You just trees down. Some are commenting there's no more trees. Right. I'm sure an exaggeration, but it looks like it to a lot of the people there. A lot of flooding, buildings ripped apart, all that kind of thing.
I was looking at pictures and videos of the Mexico earthquake, and the problem there is in the images, it's not as bad, not near as bad, but the images reminded me of 9/11, of the rubble trying to rescue folks under the rubble, because you have thousands of pounds of concrete maybe on top of someone there in a cranny somewhere stuck. And if you get a bulldozer out to remove it, you risk it all collapsing. And so it's really like a maze trying to get people out underneath the rubble without making it all collapse.
Yeah, and I don't know what kind of resources they have available in Mexico. You know, in countries like the U.S., they have, you know, dogs that can sniff. And sometimes I think they're headed towards the use of drones, you know, of not flying drones, but things that can kind of crawl in there and see if you have people alive. And as you said, in the rubble, you can't just, you know, use a bulldozer or have a crane start lifting stuff, because you can still kill people who are trapped. Another consideration is, I'm certainly not an expert on these things, but I know that in various parts of the United States that have at least the risk of earthquakes, like in California, they have building codes that are meant to at least limit the damage and loss of life if you do have an earthquake. I'm not sure if they do any of that in Mexico. It's a relatively poor nation. I think, you know, like some of the Caribbean nations, tourism is its number. Maybe it's I think it's number one source of income. They're trying to increase, you know, the number of factories and stuff in Mexico, but so it's a relatively poor nation. What I'm saying is, you can't just order people. Well, you're gonna have to rebuild your house according to specs. Well, you just don't have the money to do that. So,
I read on CNN this morning that they are in need of flashlights and mirrors in terms of the search and rescue efforts. And I can understand flashlights, and I couldn't really get clarification as to why they might want mirrors. But maybe it's because they're trying to dig underneath things. Maybe they're using a mirror to see under things. But also, in the event you find a body, you know, you could use a mirror to find out if the person is breathing or not. So we're going to see a lot of these things. And talking about the video, we have video up, and we'll continue to update this throughout the day on onenewsnow.com, of the videos from both Puerto Rico, other places affected by the hurricanes, as well as Mexico City. So please visit onenewsnow.com and find that video as well.
So continue praying, folks, and as the Lord leads, give to whatever relief agencies. We like 8 Days of Hope in terms of what they're able to do, but there are other good Christian, Samaritan's Purse, and other good Christian organizations that are always willing to help and lend a hand. Perhaps the Lord will lead you to give towards one of these more recent disasters as well. All right, Chris, what else you got?
Well, we had this at the top of the hour, and we'll certainly find out more about this throughout the day as more information unfolds. You know, we've talked about memorials being damaged, statues being removed, people calling for this or that to be done in the wake of events from Charlottesville. I'm not exactly sure if this is connected, but it does involve a memorial, that being the Lincoln Memorial. Fox News is reporting a student from the Kyrgyz Republic was arrested Monday for allegedly using a penny to engrave some letters into the fifth pillar on the north side of the Lincoln Memorial in Washington. It's a 21-year-old. He was arrested and charged with malicious destruction of property. If convicted, the maximum penalty he faces is 10 years in prison. and a $25,000 fine. The report, which cites the U.S. Park Police, said an officer caught him in the act last month. The Lincoln Memorial was tagged with red spray paint with an anti-law message. You know, again, this comes after a lot of people have been calling for cities and governments to remove Confederate statues, memorials for people that fought for the South in the Civil War. But now in the last couple of weeks, we've had people defacing or trying to destroy the Lincoln Memorial. So it's not just Confederate emblems or symbols. We're seeing all sorts of things.
Well, and I have a story that I didn't get to yesterday. And now it's connected to Italians, so some of our listeners are automatically going to maybe smile or think I'm making a joke. I'm not, and I'm not really getting involved with the whole discussion. But this has to do with a monument to Christopher Columbus in New York City. It's a huge statue in what's called Columbus Circle. And this is an article from the New York Post. It says Christopher Columbus could be the next on the monument's chopping block. The 76-foot structure, that's tall, honoring the explorer at Columbus Circle, should be among the statues reviewed by the city for potential purging, says City Council Speaker Melissa Mark Viverito. And that is because, you know, Christopher Columbus, 15th-century explorer, does not always match up to our sensibilities here in 2017. And there are people who blame Christopher Columbus for the wiping out of, you know, groups of Indians who were here, Native Americans who were here first. Mm-hmm. So what happened is that the Italian-American groups in New York City have united. They, the Columbus Citizens Foundation has partnered with over 39 other Italian-American organizations. I didn't even know there were that many in New York City. I mean, how many different groups can you have for Italian-Americans? But they announced that they're reaching out to all New York City elected officials and 2017 electoral candidates to find out what their stance is, because there are a lot of Italians in New York City, and they vote. So this is another, you know, this push to remove monuments, as you said, goes beyond just Confederate statues now. It has gone to founding fathers and even further back, Christopher Columbus. So I don't know what, if these groups had everything they wanted, I guess there just wouldn't be any statues unless there are a few to Fidel Castro or, you know, or some of the other radicals of which they approve.
Yeah. You know what it seems? It seems like they just want history, all history, any history connected to the United States before they were born, you know, before, I guess, before 2000s, they want it all wiped out. And I guess they want a clean slate to start over, start their own new history book.
Right.
Because like Abraham Lincoln, if I'm correct, he was a president who helped lead the North to end slavery in the South. Is that correct?
Right. He was the 16th president. He was the president who kept the Union intact.
Right.
And issued the Emancipation Proclamation. And, you know, listen, to your point, the problem for these groups is just how far are you willing to go? Now, what they're doing is they're saying, well, we find these flaws in these individuals. We disapprove of those flaws, so their statues should come down. They're talking about, I mean, do you rename cities?
Right.
You rename Washington, D.C., Columbus, Ohio. I mean, do you go that far? They want to rename streets.
Right.
They want to rename schools. And the fact of the matter is you're dealing with flawed human beings, and that does not necessarily negate the great things that they have done when you're talking about the founding fathers. And listen, you know, Martin Luther King Jr., I consider to be a hero for America in terms of him leading the civil rights movement. He wasn't the only one, but he was certainly one of the most, or perhaps the most visible, unless you consider maybe Malcolm X. But there are some things about the way he lived his life. I'm not going to name them because it's controversial to do so. But if those things are true, does that mean that everything he did that was heroic should be erased?
Yeah. I mean, and that just can be applied to anyone in American history. I mean, look at President Bill Clinton. He had an affair in the Oval Office.
Right.
Should we not have any mention of him anywhere? I wouldn't go as far to say that he was a sitting U.S. president. You know, if
he's
you want
a flawed man,
right? If you want to, he still deserves to be mentioned in the history books and statues as a president of the United States. So this, if you apply their standard of just wiping out everyone who has any mention of any flaw, then we'll have no history.
Yeah.
Which would go to your point, maybe what they're at.
Yeah, right. And a lot of people not familiar with where we are or Mississippi itself, we have, like a lot of places, we've got a Martin Luther King Boulevard here right. in the town where we live, but there's also, you know, we're in Lee County, Mississippi, and there's yeah. a Robert E. Lee Drive and things of that nature. Schools get out, a lot of them, not all of them, but a lot of schools get out for Columbus Day. For the exact reason because it's Columbus Day. Schools still do programs and things like that to teach kids about Columbus Day. All of that is going to be up in the air now because once New York does it or once Sacramento does it or San Francisco, other cities start following suit because people go to the internet and start a change.org petition and call their congressman or whatever else, and then all of a sudden it just snowballs. And eventually we're all going to wear tan and there's going to be no monuments and statues of any nature, and we're all just going to refer to each other as
my personal belief is that these some of these groups, I'm not going to say that all of them, some of them may have their issues, and this may be what they, you know, they spend their time doing, yeah. educating people. I understand that, but my own personal opinion is what these many of these groups would rather do is replace these statues with Fidel Castro and Vladimir Lenin and Che Guevara, because
right.
I think they're Marxist. And I think their goal is to yeah. completely undermine the U.S. Constitution. Mm. And some people may say, well, you're wearing your tinfoil hat today. Well, I'm not.
That's fine.
Maybe, right. maybe that is where I'm coming from. Maybe I'm over-exaggerating things. But I personally think most of these groups are Marxist in their orientation. And they hate America because they hate capitalism. They hate freedom. And their intention is to, as all Marxists do, is to scrub away the history that could lead people to disagree with Marxism. And the ideas of the Founding Fathers, right. for example, are in opposition to Marxism. Mm-hmm. So in order to undermine that ideology, the ideology of freedom, you have to undermine the individual's who brought us freedom, right. and I think that's what this is about.
All the more reason to teach your kids, A, the Constitution, and more importantly, the Holy Bible.
Yes, absolutely. All right,
well,
what else?
We've got a lot of other things going on in the news. Let's focus for a second on the Graham-Cassidy bill. I thought this was interesting, certainly something a lot of our listeners need to be aware of. We have an effort from Senators Lindsey Graham out of South Carolina and Bill Cassidy out of Louisiana, both states where we have stations and listeners. They have an effort to what they call overhaul Obamacare. The long and short of it is they want to get rid of the individual and the employer mandates. In other words, the thou shalt have insurance rules in Obamacare that people have taken great exception to over the years. They would also do away with Medicaid expansion funding, which is something a lot of conservatives were never in favor of. However, you have people like Dr. Senator Rand Paul saying this is still 90% of Obamacare. I'm a no vote. And the reason I bring all this up is because they are expecting a CBO score in the next few days on this bill. Senator McConnell, the majority leader, plans to bring this up for a vote. They need to get something done by September 30th if they want to use what's been referred to as the budget reconciliation process, which has to do with the amount of support you would need to get it passed. Bill Cassidy, one half of this bill, says they are near or at 50 votes. If it gets to 50 votes, that's when Mike Pence gets to weigh in, the vice president. This thing would get through. It would go to the House. But we don't know if that would be approved because, if you'll remember, a few months ago, we had this long, drawn-out battle over something called the American Health Care Act, which a lot of people refer to as Obamacare Lite. The Freedom Caucus worked night and day to try to get waivers and things in there to help out conservatives that do not like Obamacare. So it'll be interesting to see a potential battle brewing between the majority leader of the Senate and fellow Republican House Speaker Paul Ryan over which bill is going to get through. Meanwhile, the National Right to Life sent out a press release, vote possible next week on pro-life Graham-Cassidy Heller healthcare bill. Heller is Dean Heller out of Nevada. National Right to Life supports this effort to repeal and replace Obamacare, sponsored by the senators. According to National Right to Life, the bill would prohibit the use of tax dollars for plans that cover elective abortion. The Graham-Cassidy-Heller bill would restore the longstanding principles of the Hyde Amendment. So here we are, again, really in another battle between conservatives. It's not what they want. It's better than nothing. We're going to hear all these things in the next few days leading up to what appears to be a vote on another effort to repeal and replace Obamacare, which is a phrase we've heard and talked about a lot on this program.
Yeah, we'll continue to follow this. This will be they're only allowed to use the reconciliation procedure just once a year. Mm-hmm. So they could when you say they have to use it before September 30th, that's when that year runs out.
The end of the fiscal year.
End of the fiscal year. Then they could conceivably use it after that, after October 1st. Mm-hmm. But they might want to use the reconciliation, hold that for maybe tax reform or something. But anyway, we'll continue to focus on this. Before we go to break, though, I want us to talk about President Trump making a serious misstatement.
Yes. President Trump, always in the news for things involving his speeches, his tweets, things of that sort. President Trump yesterday, in a speech at a luncheon with African leaders, our chief executive referred to a non-existent country in Africa. A lot of people are talking about this, tweeting about it. Trump spoke of Namibia in his opening remarks before saying, quote, Namibia's healthcare system is increasingly self-sufficient during the event at the Palace Hotel in New York. Turns out Namibia does not exist. The name appears to be a merger of Namibia in southwestern Africa and Zambia, located to the northeast of Namibia. There's another country in West Africa called Gambia, which was also thought to be what he was talking about. A White House transcript later clarified that Trump had in fact been referring to Namibia, meaning Namibia's health system is increasingly self-sufficient. I did some digging.
Any further here, so he's been scorned, roundly scorned.
People are still talking about it.
Still talking about it. He made a misstatement. So, but he's the only president who's ever done that, right?
He is the only president named Donald Trump to have done that, because other presidents in the not-too-distant past have made big gaffes. I think one a lot of people may be familiar with or remember from going on 30 years ago. We had Vice President Quayle spelling potato in ways many Americans and voters did not spell potato or potato,
yes,
if you're of that persuasion. But more recently, we've had situations going on. Let's begin with this one. This is from then-Senator Barack Obama on the campaign trail in 2008, referring to the number of states in our great country.
Because, it is just wonderful to be back in Oregon, and over the last 15 months, we've traveled to every corner of the United States. I've now been in 57 states. I think one left to go. Alaska and Hawaii I was not allowed to go to, even though I really wanted to visit, but my staff would not justify it.
Now, some people have pointed out that he was cracking a joke, because if you didn't hear it loud enough, there were people kind of laughing in the background. Maybe they were assuming he was making a joke. Rick Perry has talked about this being a goof. Other people have taken great exception to it. I dug up an article in Politico that even questions 57 states, and it has the same video we just played. More to come in a second.
All right. Well, we do want to highlight some of the other missteps that other presidents have made. We may try to sneak a couple in after the break. There's one from President Bush. At least we got to get that one.
Okay.
So anyway, folks, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, Jan Markell, founder of Olive Tree Ministries, will be with us for, I don't know, about 10 minutes or so, maybe a little longer. And then we'll have Alex McFarland on. We've got some things to talk about, including the fact that the U.S. has opened a military base in Israel. We'll talk to Jan Markell about that in just a few minutes. So we're going to take a break. Ed Vitagliano, Chris Woodward, and Walker Wildman, your hosts for today's issues today. After a break, we'll be back. You'll want to come back and join us.
Is it possible to experience the peace of God in the midst of difficult circumstances? Dave Butts, president of Harvest Prayer Ministries, is experiencing that peace right now in the midst of stage 4 cancer.
No matter what it is, it seems to be so crushing, so devastating. Here's the promise of God. He will crush Satan. And here's the cool thing. It's under your feet.
Don't miss In God We Trust, Prayer, Peace, and the Presence of God. Dave Butts will encourage you no matter what you're facing. Coming up this afternoon at 2:30 Central on American Family Radio.
Peace. Be still. Why are you so afraid?
Our nation is in the throes of an especially treacherous hurricane season. The magnitude of devastation is heartbreaking. But with heartbreak comes hope. Faithful believers are going in after the storms to help survivors.
We have seen the hand of God, which no man can control.
Disasters bring an opportunity for you and I to show Jesus.
Whether hurricanes, disease, financial ruin, or even loss of life, God is faithful through the storm. Even the wind and the waves obey Him. As He is faithful, may we continue to be faithful to share God's love. A reminder from the American Family Association.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Hi, this is Todd Starnes from Fox News, and one of the things I love about Liberty University is the broad vision they have for their students. Instead of simply preparing them for a career, Liberty helps students grow into mature men and women of character, striving to impact their career fields for Christ. Liberty University is the largest Christian university in the world, offering more than 550 programs of study. Visit liberty.edu to learn more. Again, that's liberty.edu. Tyler Ruzich wants to be the next governor of the state of Kansas. Mr. Ruzich is running for the Republican nomination in a crowded field of candidates, including Kansas Secretary of State Kris Kobach. He tells the Kansas City Star he wants to be a Republican for the next generation. But he faces an uphill climb. His political resume is a bit thin. His only job experience is a part-time gig at a local grocery store. But he does have solid debating credentials, and he's already delivered a rousing campaign speech in his advanced placement U.S. history class at Shawnee Mission North High School. You see, Tyler Ruzich is 16 years old. Kansas is one of a handful of states with no age limit for the governorship, although he may be the only Republican candidate who had to get permission from his parents to run for office. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back to Today's Issues. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman today, who is in Washington, D.C. and surrounding areas for his spiritual Heritage Tour, that is, if we are allowed to call it Washington, D.C. for very much longer. We don't know how we're going to work that. Joined in studio by Chris Woodward, news anchor for American Family News, and also Walker Wildman, assistant to the president. Now, before the break, Chris, we were talking about President Trump's Nambia remarks at the U.N., and USA Today says it has prompted Twitter scorn. He made a reference to a nation in Africa that doesn't exist.
Right.
And it was clearly a combination of a couple of surrounding countries when he was talking about healthcare systems. But our point, and kind of, you know, it is kind of a little bit funny, and you get that kind of scorn when you make a mistake. Before the break, we did play a goof up from President Obama. It seems clearly to me that he misspoke, said 57 states. But I don't fault him for that because, you know, people get tired and they say the wrong thing. I know I'd hate to be inspected, every word I said to be inspected. But we do have to play one more from President Bush. And we had at least one other from then-Senator Joe Biden. And you mentioned, you know, the potato, you know, fanfare in terms of Dan Quayle years ago. Mm-hmm. But we got to at least play the Bush 43.
Yes. George W. Bush, during his time in office, he was having a press conference in the Rose Garden. There was a gentleman there who we later found out was legally blind, and we didn't know this until our president at the time told him to remove his shades.
You know, it's their country, and their governor ought to reflect their traditions and their history.
All we expect is people to be treated with respect and there to be self, you know, self-governance in a way that tolerates differences of opinion. Yeah. Peter, are you going to ask that question with those shades on? No, I'm interested in the shade look, seriously.
All right, I'll keep it then.
For the viewers, there's no sun.
I guess it depends on your perspective.
Touché.
He later apologized, but that did not stop the scorn. A lot of people, you know, challenged Bush for his intellect and questioned his whether or not he was able to lead, and they pointed to that as at the time as him being an insensitive Texan who was not, you know, up to speed on various conditions that all of us have.
Yeah. So you know, it certainly was awkward, and maybe in certain social, you know, gatherings, there are faux pas that, you know, you're not supposed to make, and you use the wrong fork. That's the salad fork, whatever. Right. In this case, the president didn't realize the person was blind, telling him to remove his shades. So anyway, the point we're making is that for all those who want to ridicule President Trump, all right, have your fun. It is funny sometimes when someone makes those kinds of gaffes, but it happens to the best and the worst of politicians, and I'll let the listeners fill in the categories of who
they're
fits
all on YouTube. If you want to look
one
it
thing
up
I
yourself.
Think is funny is about once a week there's a Twitter storm going after President Trump. I'm just wondering how many Twitter storms can we have.
It's global warming has provided an opportunity for numerous Twitter storms.
Yes,
I'm blaming it on climate change.
Let's go with that.
Yeah. All right, well, we want to welcome one of our most popular people on the radio, Jan Markell, founder of Olive Tree Ministries. She is host of the radio program Understanding the Times, heard on weekends on AFR, Saturday from 1 to 2 and Sunday from 12 to 1 Central Time. Jan, welcome back to Today's Issues.
Ed, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Well, now, Jan, just as a little side note, I know all the time you've spent speaking and addressing and talking to churches and being on the air, you've never misspoke, have you?
You know, it's so interesting you're talking about that, because we're trying to correct. I pre-recorded an interview with Michelle Bachman for this weekend, and she misspoke halfway through. It was kind of a bad little item, just complete. Obviously, nobody caught it, so we're trying to patch it up here. So, yeah, we all do it all the time.
Yeah, and especially you're talking live radio or radio, and obviously for the president, speaking in front of the United Nations and those kind of things, those kinds of faux pas are going to happen. Well, Jan, one of the things we just wanted to ask you about, and then whatever's on your mind regarding world events or events here in the United States, is recently, and as far as I know, this is the first time I ever remember this, but the United States has opened a military base in Israel. Have we ever had one before, and what do you think about this?
I do not believe we've had one before, and it is indicative, I believe, that the current administration, the Trump administration, and Trump's personal affection for Israel and Netanyahu. Now, that does not mean that his entire staff is all that enamored with Israel.
Right.
You've got H.R. McMaster and some others who aren't so enamored, but President Trump is. So I think it's very significant. I really do. And, you know, in the long run, this is a blessing on America as well. Genesis 12:3, if those who bless Israel will be blessed, because God has a special love for his covenant land. I think it's a very interesting development here in 2017.
And now, there's a technical reason for why these U.S. troops will be there and operating on this base. They want to try to make sure that Israel is protected from possible missile attack from Iran or other nations. But, you know, when I first read this, and I got an article, by the way, off the website from Chaplain Gordon James Klingenschmidt.
Yes.
And so I want to give him credit for this is where I read it. But one of the things I immediately thought of is that we have troops for decades, since the Cold War began, we had troops in Germany, and we have had troops in South Korea.
That's right.
And we mentioned this yesterday or the day before on the program. When we were talking to Dr. Richard Land, the troops are there, and they're called a tripwire. And not only are they American troops there to help defend those particular nations, in the case of Germany, it was the region, NATO, but it serves as a tripwire so that an aggressive nation has to understand, if North Korea, for example, says, well, we're going to invade South Korea and take a shot, or if the Soviet Union said, well, we're going to invade, you know, West Germany, they would have to kill U.S. troops. It would be an automatic declaration of war, and it would give some nations an opportunity to pause. I wonder if, and I don't know what the total number of U.S. troops will be at this base when it is fully operational, but I wonder if that's something that the president has in mind, that if nations around Israel plan on attacking Israel, even Iran, they have to consider the fact they might kill U.S. troops, and that would be considered an act of war.
Well, I think that's a very intriguing thought. I think it's certainly possible. I think, frankly, I think this president would do almost anything to protect America and Israel. It's really a new day. I've got, as I referenced a few minutes ago, I had Michelle Bachmann on this weekend, and we comment on a lot of this. It happened to be a pre-recorded program a few days ago, but we comment on so much that you folks are talking about and that you talk about every day, for that matter. And she kind of brings out some of the positive things that are, which a lot of positive things going on in the Trump administration. She also brings out some of the negative, and we try to present it in a balanced way. But honestly, your listeners need to keep praying for this administration. It's coming under attack from every imaginable source, including Republicans, as we all know. It's been a terrible time of turmoil, and we've seen good people leave the administration. Sebastian Gorka and others have left the administration, and sometimes in their place comes in more left-wing people. Michelle and I made a statement that the left wing now seems to be running the West Wing. And that's very, very troubling. But the president puts, and we bring this out in the program, the president puts great trust in his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, who's a liberal Democrat. So, you know, that's concerning. It's very, very concerning. At the same time, Jared Kushner, being Jewish, certainly is looking out for Israel. So there's all different ways of looking at things, but bottom line is AFR listeners need to keep praying for this administration.
Jan, this is Walker here. The Iran nuclear deal that President Obama's administration came to an agreement on with Iran several years ago, that I believe in mid-October is coming up for reauthorization, which would mean that President Trump's administration will need to sign on to continue that agreement. Do you have any idea whether they will or whether they won't?
I don't have any inside information or even any leaning towards it. I know the president campaigned on what a ridiculous it wasn't even a treaty. It's sort of an agreement, and he campaigned on getting rid of it. I hope and pray he does, which frankly doesn't mean Iran will stop doing their nuclear business. They're going to keep doing it. And look, they've been given billions of dollars besides by the last administration. It was total insanity. And it's going to be, it could lead to a complete disaster if something isn't done. But we're in those biblically prophesied end times, and they're characterized in the Bible as perilous times. And we just need to be electing leaders that kind of diffuse these perilous times. You know, previous administration did nothing but ramp them up all the time, and this Iran nuclear deal is probably the primary illustration of insanity coming out of Washington, and I hope and pray this new administration will put that fire out. I have no inside information at this time.
Jan, before we let you go, I know we have you on till about 10:45 Central Time. So I'm just going to give you I just want your kind of surface take on the claim from David Meade, who I don't know who he is, But he claims that this Saturday is it. The balloon goes up. It is the rapture and the beginning of the seven-year tribulation. Should I make plans with my family this weekend, or should I spend the day in prayer?
Well, my short answer, and I will keep it short, and obviously I could expound for the next 45 minutes. My real short answer is the Bible says no man knows the day or the hour. The Bible says he will come as a thief in the night when we're least expecting him. And I'll tell you, it's not just one or two people who believe this. It's a subset of millions of Christians who believe this. It's taken the evangelical eschatological community by storm. I believe nothing will happen. I don't want to put these folks down. The reason they're feeling this way is they want the Lord to come back so badly. Some of them have found a sign in the sky. Can't go into it. Takes too much time. They found a sign in the sky that tells them the rapture very likely will happen this Saturday. We need to be careful of it, because when it doesn't happen, what does the rest of the world do? They look at us and laugh. That's why we need to stay away from it.
Well, Jan Markell has been our guest, founder of Olive Tree Ministries. She's host of the radio program Heard right here in American Family Radio, Understanding the Times, Saturdays from 1 to 2 Central Time, Sundays from 12 to 1 Central. And Jan, you said, who is your guest?
Michelle Bachman. Okay. She'll give some great insights this weekend on the United Nations, on the Trump administration. We'll have good news. We'll have positive news. We'll have concerning news.
All right. The former congresswoman from Minnesota. All right, Jan, thank you so much for being on with us.
Yeah, bye now.
All right. Well, we want to welcome, we're going back to back with smart people. This is what I like to have. Alex McFarland, no stranger to the AFR listening audience. He's an author. He's a writer. Apologetics expert. He's especially known for being co-host of Exploring the Word with Bert Harper, heard weekdays on American Family Radio at 3 p.m. Central Time. Alex, welcome to the program, and we're going to give you your shot, brother. We're going to give
Hello, gentlemen. It's great to be on, and thanks for having me again.
Well, we want to know, you probably heard at least part of the question I asked Jan Markell was discussing David Mead, who is, according to the some of the stories about him, a self-described specialist in research and investigations. He has predicted that this Saturday, I don't know exactly what time, but this Saturday, the rapture will occur, and that will be the beginning of the seven-year tribulation. And as I asked Jan Markell, I have some plans for this weekend, a little bit of football to watch. Should I stick with those plans, or should I spend the day in prayer? And that's a little snarky. I understand that. But what's your take on the predictions for Saturday?
Well, bless his heart, he knows more than Jesus, doesn't he? Because Jesus said, no man knows the day or the hour, not even the Son, at least while he was on earth in his incarnate divine human form here on earth. He didn't know. He said only the Father. But this harkens back to 29 years ago in 1988. How many listeners would remember the name Edgar G. Wisnett? Ed, do you remember that name?
I do remember. Yep.
Okay, Edgar G. Wisnett wrote a book, and I'd only been a Christian 3 years at that point, but it made a big splash, called 88 Reasons the Rapture is in 88.
Right.
And when it didn't happen in September of 1988, he said, well, I've made a miscalculation, and it's going to be 1989. I remember everybody joked and said, it's great in 88, but it's looking fine in 89. But you know, I'm sure many people have said this, but in the outside unlikely chance that this guy did, you know, accurately guess the date of the rapture, the Lord would move it, because when Matthew 24:36 says no one knows the day or the hour. Now, I do think we can know the season. You know, we can discern signs of the times, and certainly the world has become a bit of a powder keg, and the chess pieces for Armageddon appear to be somewhat arranged on the table, but I've never gambled in my life. I've never gambled on anything, but I would bet large money the rapture will not be this Saturday. Because, look, Edgar Wisnett said it was going to be in 88, and if that be the case, we're 29 years into the tribulation.
Well, that causes people going to have to rearrange their charts. A 29-year tribulation.
And I would beg people, listen, God bless that gentleman. Please don't waste your money on books like that. And in fact, I halfway believe some of these people that predict the end of the world are doing it just to bait Christians into looking foolish.
Well, if that's their goal, they certainly succeed.
Hey, Alex, it's Chris here. In addition to exploring the Word and your books and the news articles that we've had with you at OneNewsNow.com, you are one of the contributors for our Millennials ministry, that being EngageMagazine.net. Is this situation that we're talking about here, predictions of the end of the world, is that an opportunity for millennials who know Christ, who are in the Bible, to engage people of their age range? Because, as Ed mentioned just a moment ago, this is going to come and pass, and people are going to make fun of Christians, and it may cause younger people who are biblically illiterate to say, you know what, God's not real, I'm not going to believe. Is this an opportunity, as much as we want to maybe laugh or scoff at the silly prediction, is that something that we as Christians, young Christians specifically, should be talking with people about?
Yeah, I think so. And by the way, EngageMagazine.net is wonderful. It's really unique. I hope everybody listening will check out the website, EngageMagazine.net. And yes, it has been my privilege to write for it and to participate in some podcasts. And you guys, I cannot applaud enough what you all are doing to bless the lives, reaching those 30 and under, and being a great resource. And so I applaud what Engage stands for. But it is a good opportunity, I think, for millennials and younger to talk to their peers about the credibility of the gospel. Because, see, when we jump on bandwagons like this and they don't pan out and it turns out to be a flash in the pan and somebody, wrote some hastily thrown together book and they make money and then it's over, it only undermines the credibility of Christianity. And while we do have, 2 Peter 1, a sure word from God, the Bible, and we do have the blessed hope that Christ is going to return and we'll see him one day, the Bible is God's word. Our eternity with our Savior, that is a guarantee. But we're not to jump on bandwagons and fall for hucksterism and what clearly, the Bible warns us not to do. We don't set a date, and we don't fall for those who do set a date. And so it's an opportunity to show that we have a credible faith by not falling for that which is incredible.
Well, amen. That's a good teaching for those who are listening and good encouragement. I like the angle, Chris, of encouraging young people to get up to speed on these kinds of things so they can bear witness in schools and other places where they might hang out or have friends who might have questions or who might be dismissive of the Christian faith. This is a part of why apologetics is so important. Mm-hmm. Let me switch gears on you just a little bit, Alex. This is something that you're not going to know probably the specific instance I'm going to refer to, but you're going to certainly be aware of the broader issue of transgenderism. But I'm looking at a Fox News story, and it is a story regarding a Florida elementary school at Canopy Oaks Elementary in Tallahassee. This Florida teacher teaches fifth grade, has sent a letter home, has communicated this to her fifth grade students. Her name is Chloe Brassack, and has also sent a letter, I guess, to parents, asking fifth grade students to use gender-neutral pronouns in the classroom, and has said that she wants to be referred to using gender-neutral terms. She said, my prefix is mix, M-X, not Ms., yes, not Mrs., yes, that kind of thing. And my pronouns are they, them, there, instead of he, his, she, hers. She's told students, I know it takes some practice for it to feel natural, but students catch on pretty quickly. That might be the letter that she sent home to parents. The school is defending her and supporting her. First of all, let me just ask you this. How has this movement taken root so quickly when it took the homosexual movement, really the political movement, started in 1969? It certainly sped up in terms of its accomplishments in the last decade, 10, 15 years. How has this taken root so quickly, and what do you advise parents to do as we approach a time when I think more and more teachers are going to do this kind of thing?
Well, this is one more good reason that Christian parents need to get their kids out of public school, because the public schools have drunken the relativistic Kool-Aid, the militant egalitarian mindset that there are no differences between males and females. This teacher, and I'm familiar with the story, and by the way, it's very sad that you know, even states like California and Washington, D.C., the District of Columbia, are offering the MX prefix on driver's licenses. Now, this goes against natural law. It goes against common sense. Every parent should get their kid out of public schools that are filling the heads of young people with such lunacy. Let me say this. Besides natural law, besides the Word of God, one of America's respected neurosurgeons, a doctor named Frances Jensen, she wrote a book called The Teenage Brain. And I've used this resource in a lot of her research in writing about teens and millennials. Okay, Frances Jensen, MD, says, quote, that there are physiological differences between male and female is undeniable, end of quote. So to a Chloe Bresic, who says, you know, use gender-neutral pronouns, I would say, why, when males and females are not gender-neutral? Why would I train my class to do that which is not only counterintuitive but counterfactual? The other thing I would say, if you're a Christian, for goodness sakes, run for office and get on the school board. And, of course, the school is going to support this teacher, the ignorance of this teacher, because most public school administrators have no backbone, have no courage, and they will fall for that which is false rather than get out of their comfort zone to defend that which is true. Now, one last thing that I would say in response to this is that our country is at a time when we've lost the ability to think critically. Have you guys commented on the shooting of Scout Schultz that took place for Saturday night at Georgia Tech?
Yes, yeah, we covered that yesterday.
And in the news, even Fox News referred to this individual as they and them. And it reminded me when Jesus cast out a demon, call me legion for we are many. Look, we are individuals. We're not schizophrenic. There's not a plurality. There's an individual, hence the appropriateness of the term he, she, Mr., Mrs. This idea of using for a single person, they, and the plural pronouns for an individual, it's lunacy. But that's America in the 21st century apart from Christ.
Alex, what are you going to talk about? What part of the Bible are you going to cover, you and Bert going to cover this afternoon?
We are in Amos chapter 7, 8 today. Amos. And boy, Amos would have a tough time getting a preaching job in the 21st century.
Well, listen, Alex McFarland has been our guest, author and apologetics expert, co-host of Exploring the Word with Bert Harper, heard weekdays on AFR at 3 p.m. Central Time. As Walker just asked, folks, you're listening, make sure you tune in. Amos is a tough book. It's a very encouraging book. But as Alex points out, those are the days when we had preachers with spines of steel. Alex,
That's right.
Thank you so much, brother, for being on with us today.
God bless you.
All right, folks, we're going to take a five-minute break for news. Please rejoin us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.